Blog Talk Radio.
Well, it's that time, everybody. As always, every Sunday at 3 o'clock, this is Wild World with Larry Batson, broadcasting from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana, as we experience rather cool temperatures here in Indiana. And as always, from the Wild World News headquarters in Indianapolis, Indiana, now HD, the honorable, distinguished, and always punctual Dr. Henry Day. Good afternoon, Doc.
Good afternoon, Mr. Batson. Having a lot of hummingbirds, thanks to your special formula.
Oh, I know. That formula. You know, they say 4-1. We do 3-1, and they just come in droves. Unbelievable.
Well, they are visiting us now.
Well,
also, do you remember last week, I told a story on the program about the incident I had with the Scarlet Tanager?
Yeah, yes.
Well, strangely enough, for the first time, I've lived here for 23 years. For the first time ever, I have a pair of Scarlet Tanagers nesting in the backyard.
Oh, that's very cool. Oh, my gosh. I've only seen seen them once out here, and we're in the middle of darn near nowhere. So that's very
cool. I lived in Panama, they would migrate all the way from North America down to Panama. And I would see them down there. This is the first pair I've seen up here. So it's pretty
exciting.
On the west side of Indianapolis.
Oh, yeah. And suburbia. Absolutely. That's very cool.
And if you can't tell, the parrot is in the studio with me today.
Oh, good. Well, he always interjects such wonderful things and such great comments. It's always fantastic. Hey, we've got a wonderful guest today, Dr. Day. We're going to be talking racing. One of the founders, I should say. When I say founders, one of the people that were involved with the Indianapolis 500 in what we call the heyday, the 50s and 60s and 70s, and later into the 80s. And Danny Laycock's going to be with us, and we're going to talk racing. And you know what I'm so envious of, Dr. Day? His family worked with Lloyd Ruby, one of my favorite drivers, who I always wanted to win. And he never quite got it done.
Is that right? That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Well, it's going to be very cool. So are you ready on your end?
Let's do it so we can get our guest on.
It's now time from his broadcasting mecca in Indianapolis, Indiana, the distinguished Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News.
Well, let's start out with some bad and good news. Now, we're going to do this first to get it out of the way. A once common farm pesticide, carbofuran, may be the blame for the dozens of bald eagle deaths over the past 3 years. Now, that's bad news that the bald eagles have been poisoned. The good news is we think we found out what part of the problem is. It's the carbofuran, And if you're using it now, please stop. And if you don't stop, then eat it yourself.
Yeah.
No, that's not a good idea.
No, well, you know, some people it might be. Well, you know, DT, what was the chemical that caused the eagles to have thin-shelled eggs and they were breaking them just trying to...
I think you're right, it was the DDT.
DDT, yeah, years ago, and they resolved that problem.
Yeah, well,
so
farmers are using this to, for mice and rats and stuff, and then the eagles, they say an injured animal, and you know what happens. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
But anyway, that is good and bad news. All right. Well, here we are trying to protect eagles, and this happens. Kodiak, Alaska. An eagle grabbed a piece of freezer-burnt halibut that someone had thrown out and apparently misjudged its climb up a cliff with the four-pound piece of frozen fish. Yeah, now the wrong trajectory led the eagle to smash through a front window of Stacy Studebaker's house last Saturday.
Oh, my God. Man. That's unfortunate.
You're having dinner and an eagle and a frozen hunk of halibut comes through the front window.
You know, that's pretty scary, but I'll have to say eagles in Alaska are like pigeons. They're everywhere. It's unbelievable. So I imagine they weren't nearly as shocked as we would be.
Yeah, that is correct, yeah.
Well,
and freezer burn halibut. There you go. All right, here's some hoppy news. Yosemite National Park, California. The red-legged frogs that were made famous by Mark Twain, you know, the Calaveras jumping frogs, well, they've been missing from Yosemite for decades. And now they are coming back. The park is full of red-legged frogs.
Cool. That's outstanding, Mike. Of course, the amphibians are the barometer on how Mother Nature's doing. You know, if the nays start their populations go down, we know we're in big trouble because they are the barometer for the outdoors. That's for sure.
All right. Now, we have a lot of friends that listen to the program that are mushroom hunters. Well, here's an interesting thing I didn't know. This is from Jackson, Wyoming. The National Forest Managers expect to see large numbers of mushroom hunters in the weeks ahead because the forests were recently burned. And apparently after there's a forest fire, it's a prime area to look for morels.
Huh. I know it's healthy for the forest when they have a burn like that, but yeah, that makes sense. Absolutely. Have you gone mushroom hunting this year, Doc?
No, I haven't, but I tell you what, you're never going to believe this. Last week, I was doing the grass and had got it pretty much done and had a little area to cut. I took a break and went back out to start the lawnmower out by the pear tree. Well, I moved about 2 inches when I saw this huge morel mushroom.
Oh.
I was like, no way. I've lived here for 23 years. There's never been a mushroom in the yard. And I looked a few inches away, and there was another one. A few inches from that was another one.
Oh.
So I didn't actually go mushroom hunting. I was cutting the grass. The largest morel weighed almost 1 pound.
Oh, my Lord. Gosh, you know the market on those this year, that one morel mushroom, if it weighed a pound, was worth about $40.
Wow. I know, that's amazing. An amazing thing.
We went for a little bit the other day, and we found quite a few. So we got quite lucky. Found quite a few.
Well, yeah, the morels, if you've never had them before, they are a wonderful thing. All right, they're expecting in Ohio. The Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden is expecting 2 new baby giraffes this year. So
yay.
Start thinking of good giraffes names. Like Danny.
Oh, there you
Larry.
Go. Oh, yeah.
Eddie Henry. I think Henry would be a good giraffe.
It would
All
be.
Right, well,
no.
We're weevil walking in San Diego, California. The San Diego Zoo has 2 new arrivals. A pair of endangered African penguin chicks. Now, here's good names for penguin chicks, Doug and Barbara. Those are the names chosen for the 2 new chicks.
Well, I like that. I hate the names that are like Kumadatipi or Wapadututi or something, you know, kids who can't remember. So I like the simple.
Right.
That's
how to pronounce, yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, you'll like this nickname, too, then. In New Bedford, Massachusetts, a 2-year-old red panda is the newest attraction there at the Buttonwood Park Zoo. Now, The panda was introduced to visitors on Friday, and the new panda's name is Jacob.
Oh, that's a nice name. Nice biblical name. Yeah, that's cool.
Now, this next story, we are not talking about Volkswagens. We're in Gainesville, Florida. It is the season of the love bugs.
Mm.
Have you ever been to Florida when the love bugs are mating?
Oh, I don't think so.
Well, picture, if you will, large black masses, clouds. It looks like the clouds have dropped down to the ground, and there are these love bugs. Now, they're driving Floridians crazy right now, and as we know, they're not good for the finishes on cars, but they are good for the environment, especially to the soil. Yeah,
yes.
These little guys get together, and what happens, a lot of people that live in the love bug area, they have to get special screens for their grills so they don't clog up the radiators.
Yeah.
And also, they will eat the paint right off your vehicle.
Oh, my. Well, Florida's a nice place to visit. That's all I'll say.
Yeah. Well, while we're in Florida, listen to this. Punta Gorda. Sheriff's officials say a woman pulled a small alligator from her yoga pants during a traffic stop. Yeah. Also found in the truck were several turtles.
Well.
Now, I can't tell you more about this story without getting in trouble, so we're just going to move on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good idea.
Alligator in her yoga pants.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, we want to warn you, as we do every year, this is the time of the year to be alerted that the moose will be crossing the roadways. Yes, it's happening everywhere. So you do not want to run into a moose. It is mating season. Be prepared. Also, I've been getting a lot of calls about the bears this year. The bears are being especially bad. Take down your bird feeders. They've just come out of hibernation. They're going to be looking for food.
Oh, and they posted a picture on the internet of people that had left their car unlocked, windows rolled up, but unlocked, and the bears had gotten into the car. This was in Colorado, and you should see the damage they did. It was, oh my God. And of course, many, many years ago when we were at Old Indiana Fun Park doing wildlife shows, we had a couple bears, and one time they were in our truck, and they had gotten out. We hadn't realized it, and they completely destroyed the upholstery on all of our seats. But to tell you the truth, after the bears tore up the seats, the seats were really far more comfortable. So I don't know.
You know, I have to agree with you. Yeah, I remember that when that happened, and it seemed like every place that your hand might touch on the dash or the seats or whatever, it was probably left a little bit of salt, and I think that's maybe where the bears went. But, you're right, the seats were comfortable.
You know, I was kind of thinking, too, do they have bear issues in England?
Well, we should ask our good buddy Dave if he's on the line.
And Dave Davies from the Kinks. Yeah, let's see if we can rustle him up.
Yeah, Dave. Hey, you with us?
You really got me going.
Love you guys. You guys, your show's always great. You always ask me the craziest questions when I'm on. So now I hope I haven't hurt anybody's feelings, but I'll just try to be truthful, you know. We all have a lot of problems with bears here. What we really hate over here is Celine Dion.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We have a pet parrot. We picked pictures of her out of the paper and put her in the parrot cage.
Well, that's not a nice thing to do, Dave.
Well, it's one thing me and my brother Ray agree on.
And how is Ray, by the way?
Oh, he's doing fine. He's just ugly as hell.
In other words, things haven't changed.
Oh, yeah, things haven't changed. Anyway, keep up the good work, guys. Love listening to the show.
Well, thank you very much. Dave Davies, lead guitarist for the Kinks on Blog Talk.
Thank you, Dave.
Always
good to hear from you.
Well, okay. That's always enlightening.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's finish up this stuff so we can get to your favorite game and our facts of the day. Here's a shocking story out of Portland, Maine. Yes, it seems like millions of baby eels are steadily moving through the area. And for you poachers out there, beware. They have new regulators that will be watching you, so be on your best behavior. Also, the local news, Franklin, Indiana. Researchers at Franklin College have received a grant to study behavior and management, yes, listen to this, of the Canada geese.
You know, my good friend, my rest in peace, God bless his soul, Glenn Baker, who was a biologist for the state of Indiana, it was his efforts to reintroduce the Canadian geese to Indiana, and you know what? It was somewhat successful.
Yeah, you could say that. Yeah.
Yeah, did quite well, but he would never admit that he was the one, but he was the one. Yeah, but anyway.
Well, I had an encounter with a mother and her young this past week. As a matter of fact, they were trapped in a fenced-in parking area, and there were only three goslings there, but I was able to squeeze them under the fence and then assist her getting over the fence and the barbed wire. So
well,
that was my good deed this week.
Outstanding, Dr. Day. What bravery that must have taken, because that hurts when they nip you.
Oh, yeah.
Good job. Good job. My gosh. We're all prepping.
Ready? Are you ready now to play Who's Gotten Older?
Well, I guess we are. I don't know. Well, it's that time for the game that I totally despise, Who Got Older, your host, Dr. Henry Day. And my competition this week is Danny Laycock. And if you will explain the rules, Dr. Day, to Mr. Laycock, we can get on with this mess.
Well, it's very simple, Danny. I will give you a celebrity's name and who has had a birthday this past week, and you can guess or tell me exactly how old they are. That's how we play. We scored at the end. There is a prize we'll be giving away. You may like it or not, but, there's a prize at the end of the contest.
Oh, boy, I'm looking forward to it.
All right, let's play. Now, we have a connection with our first birthday guest. It's been a few years ago, but we had the Dragon Brothers on the program.
Mm-hmm.
Daryl Dragon Brothers, and quite a great show. So any of our listeners that want to go back and listen to that, that was a really good show. But anyway, we're a connection with the Dragon Brothers. The singer Tony Tennille had a birthday this past week. Tell me how old Tony Tennille turned.
Love, love will keep us together.
I'll say she's probably, they're probably 55.
I'll say 65.
Well, you guys suck already. Tony turned 79 May 8th, Wednesday. Tony was 79.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, love
we
do
missed that one a little.
Yeah, we're a little off on that one.
All right, let's see how you do with this one. Singer Eric Burdon of the Animals.
Oh, my goodness.
Spill the wine.
Bill,
it's hard to believe that he's still alive.
Yes, it is. It is.
Yeah, that is very true, yeah.
I would say he's got to be 79, if not 80.
Yeah, I'll say 70.
Well, Danny got you on this one. He turned 78 this past week.
Oh, my. Okay.
All
yeah,
right.
Amazing that he's still alive. I remember a story that he was on an airplane, and one of the wings had caught fire. And they had got all the guests off of the plane, at least they thought they had. He was sitting on the wing, and Eric always went. He always had a little medicine bag on his side. And he was so high, he just wanted to stay and watch the wing burn.
Oh, God. I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he has entertained us over the years, and thank you, Eric. All right, one of my favorites, singer Donovan Leitch. Well, you love like heaven, Sunshine Superman.
82.
I'll say 71.
Well, Mr. Batson, you're a little closer there. Donovan turned 73.
Oh, my Lord, how's this happening? Gosh.
Yeah, well, we're all getting older.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll do a little better with this one. Singer Bono of U2 had a birthday this past week. How old is Bono?
I'll say 59.
I'll say 72.
Well, I'm sorry, Danny, what did you say?
59.
Well, Bono turned 59 this past week.
Oh, he hit it right on the head.
All right.
Right on the nose. Yeah. Gosh, I'm losing again.
Doing good. All right, now, not a big fan, but still, over the years, has produced a lot of music. Singer Bob Seger. How old is Bob? What's your guess, Danny?
Bob Seger, I'll say, is 62.
I'll say 71.
Bob turned 74 on Monday this past week.
Oh,
all right, we're tied back up, gentlemen.
Oh.
Let's see how you do with singer Billy Joel.
Oh, not worth a darn.
Seventy or 71.
I think he's a lot younger than I'll say 64.
Well, Daddy hit it right on the head. He turned 70 this week.
I hate this game. I hate this game so much. I just hate it. This sucks.
Up?
I just hate it. Just hate
now,
it.
Well,
gentlemen, do you remember singer Gary Glitter?
Oh. Oh, God. 110.
He's got to be pretty old, huh? How about 76 or 5?
All right, Larry.
I'll say, I'll say 85.
Well, Danny hit it right on the head again. He turned 75 this week.
Oh.
All right. Well, I'm afraid, Mr. Batson, you're not going to win this round. But I threw one more, and every year I would throw this one in for Shelley Leibovitz.
Yeah.
And since he's not here, I'm still going to keep it in. Actress.
Sure.
Tracy Lords.
Oh my God.
How old is Tracy Lords?
52.
I'll say 69.
Oh, you would.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm afraid you couldn't have won this round anyway, but Danny was right there at 51.
Oh my gosh.
I'm afraid you got royally trumped this time. Danny, you won this round. Good job.
Thank you.
Here's your prize. Since you won, you have to be on the show again.
That's not a problem.
Yeah, well, some people think it's good, some people think it's bad, but that's the way it is. All right, it is Mother's Day, and if you have the opportunity today, please kiss your mother. And also, you can burn 26 calories in a one-minute kiss. So I want you to think about that.
We're thinking.
Also, our fact of the day, in the 1700s, you could sell a fresh deer skin of a buck for $1, hence the term buck.
Oh,
and
wow.
That's the Wild World News for May 12th.
Well, once again, a great job done by Dr. Henry Day and his staff at the Wild World News headquarters in Indianapolis. All HD, it absolutely sounds spectacular, Dr. Day. That knotty pine paneling just is exquisite, just exquisite. Want to remind everyone to check out our Facebook page, Larry the Animal Guy and Friends. All animals, all fun, Larry the Animal Guy and Friends. And also, you can make your contributions through our Facebook page to help support, I'm choking up, our wildlife work. That's right. Yeah, absolutely.
Round, round, get around. I get around. Yeah, get around, round, round. I get around. I get around. Never been beat, and we've never missed yet with the girls we meet.
We're talking racing this week as we bring to the program one of the mainstays that really, in the early years of the Indianapolis 500 and the, I think the heyday of the Indianapolis 500, The Laycock name was big. It was big when the race was just outstanding. And, man, and we're so privileged to have on the show this week Danny Laycock, who's been part of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, was for many, many years, and also involved in racing himself. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Larry. How are you, man?
Well, we're good. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. Just living here in the lovely town of Speedway, Indiana, about a mile and a half straight west of the Speedway, and the season's getting cranked up. They had a pretty good race over there yesterday, and actually in all the little classes that they run, and looks like might be a good month of May.
Well, you know, and boy, the new people behind the track have done so much by adding the road course race, and of course they had the motorcycles and the planes. It's quite a big change from the old days, and it was just used one day of the year besides the qualifications.
Yeah, it's turned into a money-driven thing. I mean, the more things they can do to bring money through to keep it open, they're doing. Is that a bad thing? Well, yeah, maybe it is if you only want to run there one time a year, the Indianapolis 500. But, you know, the airplanes are pretty cool, brings a different crowd in. The motorcycles were just phenomenal to watch them throw the bikes around the road course. And, you know, NASCAR was great when it got started, but the newness of that is kind of wore down. They should maybe run that on the road course instead of the oval. But the IndyCar, I mean, yeah, call them cookie cutters, call them what you want, but they're still running 226 miles an hour and running wide open around the track. So, you know, that's a little different from the old days. Old days they had to lift.
Yeah. I always, when I travel in different cities and be talking to people from the South, they go, there ain't nothing like that Daytona 500. Ain't nothing like the start of that race. And I say, have you ever been to the Indianapolis 500 and sat there in those seats and watched the start of that race? There is nothing more spectacular anywhere.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, I've been to a lot of races and a lot of big races around America and watched a lot on TV. And, yeah, Daytona 500 is a big race. But the Indianapolis 500 in its heyday and for the 100th anniversary has had 350,000 to 400,000 people at one place at one time surrounding in the infield and in the grandstands. You never, ever can see that anywhere else for any sporting event. And the drivers will tell you how awesome it is to be riding around on the pace laps and looking up the grandstands. And if you watch TV, they always have what they call the big shot, where it's a wide shot of the grandstand. You see millions, well, I say millions, but you see hundreds of thousands of people. And it goes down to the cars on the track. And they take that wide shot, you know, the big shot like that many times on the pace lap because this many people don't get together for anything else.
No.
I mean.
And I.
Go ahead.
No, I was getting ready to say, and for the drivers, that, let's say the rookies, that have practiced lap after lap after lap of the track, it changes dramatically when that place is full of people. I've heard them say it's like going into a tunnel when you go into that first turn.
Yeah. Well, that's because you don't see the grandstands as much during practice when nobody's there because there's no color up in there and no movement. But when you get out there racing and the grandstands are full, you see the colors in the grandstands, and you see that there's something up there. I mean, has it gotten any smaller going into turn one on race day? No. But the colors make it seem like it is, and, you know, it chokes those guys up because, you know, those rookies out there, they got to do well or their checkbook quits writing checks.
Isn't that the truth?
So yeah, I'm not a big fan of checkbook racing, but, I mean, that's what it's come to. I mean, back in the day that you're talking about being the heyday and Lloyd Ruby and all that, those guys didn't write money, didn't write checks for those rides. Their checkbook was their shoulders and their head and no roll bars and stuff, and they survived and were a good enough driver to get considered to be there and got there.
Mm-hmm. So your family started, we were talking quite briefly before the show, you started in the 40s, is that correct?
My dad was a mailman in Indianapolis, and he delivered mail to a guy by the name of Snappy Ford, who ran the press room and the public relations at the Speedway in the 40s and into the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1949, the year I was born, my dad started working in the press room with Snappy Ford, and he worked at the Speedway after he retired from the post office until the day that he died. And he died as being the Speedway historian, plus he helped run tire tests, plus run the press room. So that's how it got started. And then through him being there, it got my brother involved with Herb Porter back in the 1956-57, working on race cars as soon as he got out of high school. And of course, I was always going to the racetrack with Mom. I mean, there's a picture of me in the Star newspaper in 1953, mm-hmm. sitting on my mama's lap, pointing at Dean Martin and Jerry Lee Lewis sitting in a race car.
there's
photographic evidence that I was at the Speedway at a young age that, you know, now I don't really remember, but I was there. So I kind of, you know, I was like an Army brat, except for I was a Speedway brat. I grew up at the Speedway, and then my brother got on his own and was asked to, he left working for Dan Gurney and All-American Racers with Lloyd Ruby. They led the 66 500 in the Bardall Eagle, the number 14.
Mm-hmm.
Red, it was white with red trim, number 14, beautiful car. Fell out when it had an oil leak in the Ford motor. And then the next year, Gene White, he was hired by Firestone, and Gene White to build cars for Lloyd Ruby to drive. And Bobby Grimm and Cale Yarborough and Leroy Yarborough also drove some at some point. But Lloyd Ruby was the main driver of the deal. And all the races that Lloyd Ruby led at the 500 was in a Laycock Mongoose.
Wow.
Which was built in Danville, Indiana. if you go out 36 and you know where Prestwick is, 525, mm-hmm. and there's an old Dodge dealership there now. My brother sold that land to him, and there's a garage near the railroad track, a red garage with a little white trim on it, and that's where about 8 Indy cars were built by Hoosier Hillbillies. I mean, my brother, me, and, you know, other people that were, you know, come from dirt track racing and other kind of racing and just were, you know, were just racers, and we welded tubing together, and Junior Dreyer made body work, and Joe Silnes, who used to drive the getaway car for John Dillinger, did body work too. And, you know, it was just a conglomerate of a lot of people that had some talent. I'm not saying I had talent. I just got lucky enough to work and be part of it and be around it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was pretty cool building Indy cars.
Oh, I can't even imagine. My gosh. And then it was such in those days such a grassroots. It's all corporate now, and they're basically all driving the same car. But in those days, you know, you brought up the name of Bobby Grimm, and of course Lloyd Ruby, and we think of old Jim Herdebees, and Ronnie, I can't think of his last name.
Ronnie Duman.
That's
the back day when men were men and sheep shook when it come to driving race cars, you know, because you had a chance of getting killed every time you went out on the racetrack, because there wasn't crushable structures like there are now in these kind of cars. And in a roadster, you were like a peanut in a box car when you crashed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the roadster was so stiff that you just bounced around inside and got hurt.
Yeah, and my God, and I can remember going to the 500 and thinking, gosh, who's going to die today? I mean, it was like, wow. We were all sure that AJ was going to meet his maker there one time or the other, because he'd had so many harrowing experiences. But we prayed that he wouldn't. But gosh, these drivers, it was just phenomenal. And like he said, there was no protection compared to now. They're basically in a cocoon of fiberglass and metal. Or they have been hurt, they have been injured, but in the old days, they would have been downright killed instantly. It was just like, my gosh.
If the cars were like they are, were like they were today, there'd be a lot more drivers turned, you know, there'd be a driver turnover and a lot of young kids would be getting rides because there'd be a lot of people, getting killed in the deal. But, you know, the rear engine cars, when they first came, they were, one, not something that the IndyCar people had built a lot of or had a lot of experience with. They had fuel pickups outside the race car back by the transmission. So if you backed into the wall, you were squirting 5 gallons of methanol up in the air that was guaranteed to catch fire. So, I mean, that's where a lot of those little fires come from. And some of them, you know, that would rip the fuel line out of the bladder and catch on fire. So, you know, and the cars would crush up because they weren't near as strong as today's carbon fiber cars. But, you know, it was a lot more dangerous back then. But everybody survived it. I mean, Parnelli got burned a little bit. AJ got burned and got hurt a couple times. And, you know, some people like Bobby Marshman did get killed in a test in a Lotus. But a lot of people got hurt a little bit and burned a little bit. And they're lucky they didn't kill as much more many people than they did.
Did 64, the Sachs McDonald crash, did that change a lot of the way that fuel was handled?
Well, it took the gasoline out of being run at the speedway for a bunch of years. I mean, I think people can run it now, but they're trying to make sure everybody runs green methanol, ethanol, or whatever you want to call it. The biggest thing that came out of that was there was fuel bladders in cars at that time, but the structure that the fuel bladder was held in, that's where McDonald's car was so bad. He had fuel bladder bags just laying inside the fiberglass.
Ooh.
So when he crashed, that bag busted open, and that's where all the fire come from. Eddie Sachs still had gasoline in his car. It didn't rupture his tanks. He was just killed by outright violent force.
Yeah, my goodness.
Blunt trauma.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest thing that come from it. And then as years progressed and they hurt more people, things got better. I mean, what the bladder went in, where the fuel cell went, all changed over time. And, you know, it's just like they hurt a lot of people because the drivers were too far and the foot boxes weren't strong. Well, once they crashed Rick Mears at Saint Air, Canada, and he almost cut his feet off, then all of a sudden everybody gave a shit about making foot boxes better.
Yeah.
You know, oh, we hurt Rick Mears. We got to make this better. It's a problem. Well, you know, Poncho Carter walks with a limp. Johnny Parsons couldn't make a 500 because he broke a leg pretty bad. Steve Kristoff broke his legs. I mean, a lot of people got hurt in lower extremities. And a lot of them healed from it, but it took a hero to get hurt for everything to get better.
Wow. We're talking to Danny Laycock. Basically, the 50s, 60s, and 70s, one of the backbones behind the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and the Laycock name was so big then. But I have to ask you, Danny, about Lloyd Ruby. What a character he must have been.
Lloyd Ruby was one of the greatest race drivers you would ever meet. Hardly talked, always talked, and when he did, he was really soft and quiet. Loved to drink, loved to play poker, and loved to go fast. And, you know, as the internet comes around and people get their own little web pages, there's a Lloyd Ruby Facebook page and stuff like that. And there's pictures that come up in the Jack Zink book I just got, of stuff with Lloyd Ruby driving for him and stuff. And to see, you know, where he really came from out of Wichita Falls and running midgets throughout Oklahoma and down in Florida during the winter and stuff. you know, you kind of know who the guy is once he gets here. You know, he came in and he ran the roadsters and stuff, and then I got hooked up with my brother and ran with my brother originally with Bill Forbes with a roadster, and they ran really good and finished well in the race, I think fifth or so in the race that year with it, and then sold the car to that roadster, went to Gordon Johncock for his rookie year, and he ended up third or so with that car. That was a moneymaker car. And then they went and drove their first rear engine car was a Hallebrand Shrike, the DuPont Golden 7 in 65. And then 66, Ruby drove the Eagle for my brother and the All-American racers. And like I said, in 67, we started building cars, and I hung around, worked with them until I went to the Army. So once I went in the Army, I kind of was done on that end of racing, and but I'd done some TV stuff also, so I had a TV career after I come back from the Army.
Yeah, it's and of course you, another great personality from that era was the beloved Jim Herdebees. I mean, gosh,
oh, what a character! Yeah, Herdebees was one of the true racers. He always had a beer in his hand, always had a story. Loved to fish. He had a big old German Shepherd by the name of Prince. That was one of the best dogs ever. I got a lot of time to hang around with him when I was a kid at the sprint car tracks and stuff. And what a great guy. And, you know, that fire hurt him and took a lot out of him and ended his career from being as good as it could have been. He still had a career after that, but it was never going to be as good as what it could have been if he hadn't got hurt.
And if I'm not mistaken, his hands were burned, and he basically had them when they reconstructed his fingers and so forth, what they did, so they'd fit on a steering wheel.
Right, so they'd fit on a steering wheel and hold a beer.
Yeah, and hold a beer. My God.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was doubled up on that. And, you know, he healed up, and he still had I helped one May with him a little bit just before I went in the Army, and, you know, his hands couldn't do a lot of the things that other hands could do, but he still had the desire to try to be there and race, but above all, he was there to have fun. He knew that he really wasn't going to make the 500, but, you know, he got enough sponsorship from people to where he was making money and got to run around the track and got to act like he was trying to make speed, and knowing that he was really never, ever going to make the speed.
Well, he was the epitome of what racers were in that day. It wasn't about the money. It was just the sport itself.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Parnelli Jones. I mean, that's one of the smartest racers out there. Him and Poit and Herdebees all kind of run sprint cars throughout the Midwest at the same time with USAC. And my dad was a scorer, so I was around those guys. Like, I'm 13, 14, 15 or so. And Parnelli Jones was one of the smartest. He never looked like he was swatting flies driving a race car. He was always smooth. His arms weren't flailing around, like I said. And he was fast. And, you know, he was smart enough to get in and do his deal with the turbine and get out. I mean, he won the 500. Mm-hmm. There was nothing else for him to go try to do. He won in just about everything else that he did, sports cars, off-road, stock cars. And he retired and used his Firestone money to buy Firestone stores, and has like 20s at one point, had like 22 Firestone stores throughout California. So, I mean, he did something with his money.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, a lot of people argue who's better, Mario, Poit, or Parnelli, and you know, Mario was pretty good, and yeah, he won the world championship. But AJ, pretty much, only thing he missed is the world championship. He won at Le Mans, won in sports cars, won in everything they drove, the Daytona 500, yada, 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 yada. And I'd have to say Poit was probably the best. And, you know, back in that day, all them guys hung out at the Georgetown Apartments. There was a guy by the name of Dick Wallen who shot film at the races. And he'd get it developed and would have movie parties at the Georgetown Apartments at the little swimming pool there. And, you know, all the racers would show up to watch themselves run around the track. And drank and chased women or whatever was going on. You know, I'm like a 13-year-old kid around this stuff, and it just was amazing to grow up being around those guys because they were regular people. They weren't nothing special, and they were racers. You know, that they weren't driven by money. You know, they were looking for money because they were barely making enough to survive. And, you know, it was pretty cool at seeing those guys and then watching Foyt win 400 or 500s and Carnelli do what he did, and, you know, Herdebees and all them guys. So, I mean, it was really a special time. But, you know, there's going to be some kid in 30 years going to be talking about how great and what the golden day years were about the sport right now.
Right. Well, it has come back. I know it was really hurt with the separation of the two racing leagues and that mess. But I will have to say that. Go ahead.
I said that was pretty stupid. All that did was hurt the product, killed a couple drivers because Kart ran some places that were too fast and. Some street courses where it was easy to hurt people, and you know that diluted the product. I always point out the fact that Buddy Lazier won the 1996 Indy 500.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
yeah,
how diluted was the product?
It was
back together. Yeah, it was diluted bad, but now that they're back together, it's better. You know, but once again, now they want to lock in the guys that run all the races into the 500 and stuff like that. And, you know, the Indy 500 is about 33 of the best racers in the world showing up with a race car, as Smokey Unick would say, hinch up your belt and go on the racetrack and race your way into the race.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's the way it should remain. I mean, you know. It, you remember bump days. You grew up around Speedway.
Sure.
Bump days back in the 60s and qualifying back in the 60s, they had crowds bigger than what they get for some of the races.
Yeah.
I mean, the first day of qualifying was a race day crowd back in the day of the Roadsters and the first part of rear engine cars. And now
they're
lucky to have 20,000 people out there.
Yeah. Oh, I know. The all those qualifications day. Now he got on to the third, you know, the Saturday before the last day was kind of slow, but that first day, oh my gosh, especially when they were trying to achieve record speeds, it was just, and the whole, here he had tens of thousands of people, these magnificent race cars, these magnificent race drivers, what tied it all together was the voice of Tom Carnegie. I mean, it was electric.
Yep. I mean, I'm not sure you'll ever hear the words, it's a new track record again at the Speedway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, 134 or whatever line Dyke set it at is pretty damn fast. And they're trying to get to that, but I think they realize that if they're going to go that fast, they're going to fly cars, and I doubt they'll ever go that fast again. But, you know, the he's on it, and Mario is slowing on the back straightaway. And, you know, just Tom Carnegie was the ultimate PA person for the Indy 500. I mean,
yeah.
I love Bob Jenkins, and I'm not slamming on him because Bob Jenkins is my best buddy.
Yeah.
He's doing the PA now. But historically, Tom Carnegie got to say the phrases that will probably never be said again. You know, like I said, a new track record.
Yeah. Well, I've sat in those stands and heard those words and amongst all those people. And the race fans were tremendous. I mean, what a great group. How many people, I mean, how many places can you shove that many people in one place with as little trouble there would be? I mean, there would be some. There would have to be. Because the snake pit, which people, you can try to explain people now, but that was a circus.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to have the snake pit and bring that vibe back to the Speedway, and you know, I would have to say legally they're scared to bring it back like it was, because there was a lot of shady stuff that went on there from you name it went on there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll be a nice guy and take the high ground for you.
Okay.
Whatever in life you think is nasty, it went on in the snake pit in the day. I mean, I think you were probably there. I was there. And you can't do that anymore. I mean, you know, they want to throw you in jail for taking your tops off, speaking of girls.
There'd be couches on fire. There'd be vehicles on fire. People sliding through the mud. It was
that's the best. That's the best part, is watching the people slide through the mud, because how do you know if there's not broken glass in that mud that you're about to slide across on your belly?
Well, I knew a fellow that cut himself on the backside quite severely from glass in that mud slide. Yeah, so it did happen. I mean, it was like, but it wasn't what, you know, I don't know how many people they would arrest before during the race or the night before, but it was special, man. It was special.
Yeah, it would be busloads of people that they'd arrest. they load up buses. Just from the state.
People wanted to get arrested so they could say, oh, I got arrested at the Indianapolis 500.
Yeah, they did.
Gosh. But
those were the good days, without a doubt.
They were. Yeah. And the competition on that racetrack and the grit, and it was just, you know, it was fantastic. I had a friend come in. He's been to every sporting event everywhere, and he'd always wanted to come to the Indianapolis 500. And he came in the year, the yellow car, can't think of his name, one. My gosh. It'll come to me. No, it was Greg.
Al Unser and the Chaparral?
No, it was later. It was only like 3 years ago, 4 years ago. Gosh, I can't think of his name. The yellow car drives for Andretti, I think. It does. It's not important. But he was one of the comments. He says,
Hunter
I would
Ray.
Love to be. Yeah, Hunter Ray. Yeah, that's it. And that year he won, and he made the comment. We were sitting in the second term, and he says, you can only see a small portion of this track. Of course, now they got the big screens up. I said, well, Mark, that's part of the excitement of it. I mean, because here they come, you know, especially I still said think the best seats were the fourth turn, as high as you could get, is when two drivers were coming down toward the end of it and running neck and neck, and then you didn't really know what was going to happen until they became in your eyesight, and here they come flying by. I mean, that was incredible. I mean, that was a show beyond shows. All those years, it was just, my gosh, fantastic. I had more fun at the track than any place. It was just phenomenal.
You know, and what a lot of people don't realize is it used to be when the month of May was here, and it was May 1, the Speedway opened up.
Yeah.
And they practiced until they qualified both weekends, not one weekend, but both weekends. And then they had carb day and race day. And if it was 25 straight days or 28 straight days or however many days it was, they ran on the track every day.
Yep.
You know, it's not like now where they're going to start next Tuesday and have everything done by Sunday and then run the race in another week.
Yeah. I liked all that. I liked all the 4 days of qualifications. I think they messed up when they worked on that. I mean, I think that was phenomenal. That was all part of the track. I mean,
well, but they had to chop that back because when you got 33 entries, you can't stretch it out over 4 days. When you got 100 entries, you got enough cars to run every day.
Sure, that's true. Absolutely. Of course, there was a one year when there was four Andretti's in the field, and we're leaving, and one of my smart aleck friends says, how many Andretti's does it take to win the 500? And he kept saying, more than four. So it was
I agree with you.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Danny, gosh, what a wonderful show. You're a historian. Who needs Donald Davidson? We got Danny Laycock.
Donald knows a lot more than I do. It's just, you know, I love the Speedway. I grew up the Speedway. What goes on nowadays, I watch on TV. And, yeah, I kind of care about, but it's, you know, it's, you know how it is when you get old, hard to walk, grumpy and all that stuff. So I doubt if I even the Speedway this year. I'll probably watch on NBC Gold all the practice and stuff. And, you know, even though I live this close, I might go over for the race. I rode my bike over the last couple of years, and that was pretty fun because they let bicycles in now.
I have a question for you, just kind of off the wall. Did you go see the Rolling Stones play at the 500?
No, they went over there after they left my house.
Oh, okay.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah,
I had to get them tuned up and send them off to play. No, I, you know, the Rolling Stones, I mean, I didn't realize the tempo of the song slowed down. I saw them on the TV the other day, and, you know, they don't sing at double tempo like they used to.
Yeah, well, they're old.
No shit. I'm old, and they're older than me, so.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what a great show, Dr. Day.
Yeah, we thought it was going to be good, and we were right. Well, Danny won the contest today, so he has to come back.
I can do that. I don't have a problem with that.
Well, we'll do that. We'll plan on maybe we'll do something close to NASCAR. Of course, the old Tony Stewart was laying out NASCAR the other day. Did you hear about that, Danny?
Oh, yeah. Stewart's one of my buddies. I helped him get going in his early days.
Yeah.
There's a whole side of stuff that we haven't even talked about, like the two aces and an Emmy that's right behind my head right now, and some Hall of Fame awards and stuff like that that I've gotten. So,
we need to get into that.
And the 20 years I did a radio show or a podcast out of Kelly's, and the 8 years of doing TV shows. Oh yeah, and I worked for ESPN a long time too. And so.
Very cool. Well, we're quite blessed to have you on our show. I hope you had a good time.
I had a great time, and especially winning the little contest there that you hate.
Yeah, I do hate it. I absolutely do hate it. Oh, my God, I hate it so much. Well, have a great week, everybody. Thank you, Danny. You've been listening to A Wild World on Blog Talk Radio.
Happy.
Wild, wild world on Blog Talk Radio.